Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 172 of The Morning After. I am your host, Sari Kamen.
And I am your other host, Leslie Stockton. Today in the studio, we have pastry chef and food writer, David Leibovitz. But first...
Yes!
Food news.
Food news, of course. And I feel like, David, the food news this week was crafted by the food gods, especially for you, because... they knew you were coming or something.
I'm waiting with bated breath.
Yes. Okay. So the first article states what is officially America's favorite casual dining restaurant. It's big news. I was wondering if you maybe had a guess of what that might be.
The hot dog counter at Costco.
That is a really, really good guess. But not everyone has a Costco card.
Okay.
This is something that's, you know, everyone can go to.
That hot dog counter is solid, though.
That is a good guess.
But they don't have sauerkraut.
Oh.
Oh, fuck them.
Yeah. Okay.
it's actually the Cheesecake Factory was voted, the most official survey of all time.
I didn't think Americans had the attention span to get through that whole menu.
That's a really good point.
I am an American, so I lump myself into that.
There are 250 menu options.
That's insane.
So I feel like that's actually kind of fair that would be everybody's favorite restaurant. Because like with 250 options, there's literally
you really
something
can't
for everybody.
Go wrong.
But are there pictures on the menu of everything?
Oh,
I haven't been.
For the non-readers out there.
Do they?
I don't... why are you looking at me?
I haven't.
I don't think I've ever been to a Cheesecake Factory.
I went to a Cheesecake Factory in Vegas 16 years ago, and I do not remember the menu, so...
Yeah. Have you been to a Cheesecake Factory?
I haven't.
I mean, you're really into pastry, I hear, so...
Yeah. I actually just like plain cheesecake, so I'm probably not their target audience.
Yes. Number four is one of my favorite restaurants... Red Lobster.
Oh, I've never been.
What? You've never had the cheddar biscuit?
We were not a Red Lobster family.
That doesn't mean you can't go. There's one in Times Square, baby.
You and me, girl.
It's
girl
a date.
Girl
day. Girl day. And of course, Olive Garden is number seven because, I don't know, because it's all you can eat breadsticks.
Salad
and that's enough
and
for America.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. I don't know if you guys heard, but Budweiser apparently is changing the name of their beer to America.
Are they trolling us?
Budweiser?
Yeah.
Most likely.
Okay.
I mean, like you and me specifically?
Yes. The two of us.
Why? I mean, probably, but like, why do you ask?
Are they trolling us with this calling beer America? I mean, why are they doing this?
Because they knew David was coming.
Wait, oh.
Are they changing all their beer or just introducing a new one?
That's a really good question. I actually don't know, but maybe you could Snapchat them.
Just
so you guys know, right before the show, David Leibovitz taught me about Snapchat. I just wanted to say that actually happened.
Yay, Snapchat.
Yep, and this is not Snapchat, so this is going to be on record forever. Okay, so the King of Beers announced it would be changing the name on its labels, so maybe all of them, to simply read America. So now you can actually imbibe America, which is what we all wanted. But like to kind of retaliate / poke fun at that, there's another domestic beer company. See, that wasn't even the story. Another domestic beer company called Saugatuck Brewery in Douglas, Michigan is calling its beer America.
Oh,
no,
of course they are.
Like, apostrophe, M-U-R-I-C. I think we had a president once who used that word a couple times. I vaguely remember that, but also I blocked it. So that's fun. And then this is actually my favorite story. This is no longer about America, but I hope you won't mind, David. This story is just, the title is, Finland is now home to the first ever Burger King spa. You're like, okay. What? Yep.
There's a joke in there. I can't.
But that is the joke is real.
Do you eat the Burger King before the Schwitz or after the Schwitz?
During. Okay, so it's an actual...
No.
Yes. So it's an actual Burger King in Helsinki in Japan. I'm really disappointed that you didn't come up with this first.
Seriously.
Okay, so... And Finland is the sauna capital of the world.
There are more saunas than people.
Really?
In Finland. Yeah.
That's
like
true?
1 point something saunas for every man, woman, and child in Finland.
Okay, so that's super weird. So there is a Burger King... An actual Burger King has, like, attached to it a 15-person sauna. There's a shower, there's a locker room, there's a media lounge, there's a PlayStation. So you can sit and schwitz, and while you schwitz, you can order a burger and then eat the burger.
No.
Yeah.
That sounds awful.
It sounds like the worst ever.
Well, maybe the joke in there is hold the pickle.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of it in my mind. I don't know if I could say it on the air, so I'm not going to.
You can actually say anything on the air here. So, that's the joke.
It.
The joke is the story. The story is the joke. They are one and the same. Yep. I have no further comments.
I love it.
Okay.
I love it.
We're going to take a break. We'll be back with David Leibovitz.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
David Leibovitz is an American pastry chef and a food writer living in Paris. He is the author of My Sweet Life in Paris, My Paris Kitchen, and many, many other delicious cookbooks. He is my absolute go-to authority on all things delicious and Parisian. Welcome to the show, David Leibovitz.
Hi there.
Welcome.
Bonjour. So happy to be here. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Ça va?
Bien, merci. That was French for those of you who didn't know.
We're not smoking.
Yet.
But there is wine.
Yes, always. Well, you're here in Brooklyn for a little bit, and I believe you mentioned it's because you're working on a new book.
I am. I'm working with my editor, who's in New York City.
Cool.
So,
can you tell
us
anything about the book, or is that like hush hush?
I have been sworn to secrecy. I signed a confidentiality agreement.
Oh, my goodness.
That's my story, and I'm sticking
An
to it.
NDA on your own book.
Okay, well, that kills my first question. Yep, moving
that's
on.
Fine.
Well, it's really nice to meet you.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us.
So you live and write about food in Paris. And my question for you is, first, how many years have you been in Paris?
I moved there around 2003, 2004.
Okay.
So I can't read the stamp. It's on my passport. It's mm-hmm. all faded now.
So. Got it. So when you were brought up at Chez Panisse, you were there for 13 years.
Well, I was brought up by my mother.
So you were brought up by your
mother, Alice Waters.
But Alice Waters is my second.
She's everybody's mother.
I don't know if she wants me to hear her referring to her as my mother, but I learned to cook a lot of...
Yeah.
I became a... What's the right word? I'm still stuck on the Burger King story.
Yeah.
No, I learned a lot about cooking, and I learned... I grew as a cook at Chez Panisse with
Alice. With that foundation and moving to Paris, how did you evolve living and writing about food in Paris from that
Well, one thing about France, I mean, Chez Panisse is in Northern California, and the climate's very similar to France. The ingredients, goat cheese, thyme, you know, red wine, garlic, that the temperament, the climate is very French. And Chez Panisse, of course, was very influenced by French country food, Italian country food. So moving to Paris was sort of a horizontal move. That wasn't really a jolt. It wasn't like, wow, I'm going to move to Hong Kong, or, you know, I'm going to move to Northern Canada.
Or to the Midwest, for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a little closer.
Yeah, but like culture shock.
Right.
For sure.
So Paris, you know, Paris is still a culture shock, believe me.
Yeah.
But it was that kind of move. It was just seemed natural. It was a place for me to go. I'd gone to baking and pastry school there as well, and chocolate school. So I was familiar with France and French culture and French food, of course. I didn't speak any French, and I didn't really know anybody. So on the other hand, I kind of did something really dumb.
That kind of turned out really well.
Well, I took a chance.
Yeah. Speaking of like the seasonality of Chez Panisse and that mm-hmm. kind of food, I think it was in My Paris Kitchen, correct me if I'm wrong, how like Parisians sort of watched Californians and Americans jump on this whole like organic trend and like CSAs and farmers markets and have kind of followed suit, possibly. But like in my mind, it was like, well, Parisians or Europeans have always been doing that. Like they get up, they go to the market. And I was sort of like, it felt like there was like a discrepancy or like a misconception part of how actually Parisians eat.
Well, it was, you know, the whole idea of cooking with the seasons, cooking at the market, cooking, eating things that are local and regional is an old idea. It's an old idea from America as well. That's how our grandparents ate. And that's how Europeans eat. That's how French people ate. But as times changed, you know, Americans started eating fast food, junky food. They started eating at restaurants that have 250 cheesecakes on the menu, for example. And then we sort of wanted to get back to our roots in the 80s, 90s, and now we're much more focused on food, on quality and ingredients and producers. Whereas the French culture, they always had that. They didn't really make a big deal about it because it was just a natural part of their culture. You know, you'd eat something with oranges in the winter when oranges were available. You'd eat something in the summer, you would start eating strawberries and cherries and so forth, and apricots. That changed, of course, as modernization took over in France and the rest of Europe, and people started getting produce from all over the world, and they lost that seasonality. They lost, you know, they started doing what Americans did, going to fast food restaurants, drinking soda. Yeah, McDo. And, you know, McDonald's is their most prosperous country. France is the most prosperous country for McDonald's in the world. So it's pretty, you know, the difference was pretty profound. And just recently they started seeing Americans, you know, they started copying ideas that are coming out of Brooklyn. It's very trendy. Mm. But,
yes.
You know, that's sort of what they did. They taught us that, and now we're sort of, they're getting their cues from us now about that. And it's kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
So when you tell your Parisian friends that you're going to spend 4 months in Brooklyn writing a book.
They're so jealous.
Yes. Do they want you to bring Brooklyn things back for them?
No, but the idea, you know, a lot of it's the idea. It's like moving to France for Americans. A lot of Americans go, I really want to move to France. I was there for a week. I live like a local in a hotel, you know, in an apartment. I was like, okay. Living like a local is go change your cable provider, you know, go to the bank and, you know, go to the city hall or something and try to get an official paper. That's living like a local. So people in France, they think, oh, living in New York is amazing. It's a great experience, the energy. And it is, you know, Paris is great, New York is great, but it's different visiting. So they see Brooklyn as being, wow, it's all these different people in Williamsburg and there's like, you know, they're all walking around on brick stones and they don't see like South Brooklyn is, you know, kind of edgy and different. Bay Ridge, Mill Basin, and, you know, Brooklyn.
It's just like the grass is always greener.
Yeah, Brooklyn.
Yeah, Brooklyn, yeah. Brooklyn is pretty. But also, you know,
Brooklyn
offers them what they don't have. You know, Brooklyn's a very rich ethnic mix that have come here to America to somehow coexist in the space. And that doesn't really exist in France. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
So when you're in Paris, so this is like a two-part question. So when you're in Paris, mm-hmm. what do you miss most about Brooklyn? And then when you're in Brooklyn, vice versa. And then also, like, maybe tell us, like, the food thing, too.
Well, when I'm not in America, I miss customer service because mm-hmm. it's so easy to get stuff done here, to get stuff delivered, to return something at the store, to go shopping. I mean, everything's available, which is great. One thing I do miss is the food shopping in France. It's so easy for me. I live near a really good market, and everybody knows me, so I can get all my meat, cheese, vegetables, and so forth very easily. I just walk out the door. And down my street, there's two different butchers. Actually, there's three. There's five bakeries. And so I miss that culture of just walking out the door and getting things.
Is there any food product like from the States that you just are like, that's the first thing I'm going to eat, like the second I get to the States?
Well, it used to be burritos because I'm from San Francisco. But now I have a thing for pepperoni pizza. I never really thought about it until a French person said to me, oh, I love New York, that pepperoni. And he was telling me how it curls up in the edges. Yeah. And get, I was like,
and the oil pulls up in the middle. Pepperoni pizza is my favorite pizza, hands down.
We'll get one. That's what we'll get afterwards.
Perfect. Okay. So if you're... Say you're on a deadline or say you're working on something and you need, for example, right now. Right now. What do you do when you need to be inspired, when you need that hit from the muse?
That's a really good question. You know, in Paris, I go out. If I want to, I'm inspired by a lot of things that I see on the street there. You know, walking around, going to a pastry shop, going to eat chocolate. And a lot of funny things happen in France. You know, like people say to me, you should write more about America. I'm like, things happen here that aren't really that funny. I mean, we're funny, nice people, but it's not like, oh, that's kind of absurd.
Do you have an example of a funny thing that'll happen?
In Paris?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Let me circle back to that.
Okay, perfect. So you would just take a walk, pop in a picture.
Actually, I have a funny story.
Yes.
I had to prove I was an author recently for something. They were needed proof. So I thought I'd bring some books to show them. I said, well, here's my books with my name on. They go, that's not proof.
I'm sorry, what?
I know. That's not, I was like, sorry? And they said, no, it's not proof. We need proof. And, it, you know, because it's France, they like paperwork. So I need like a piece of paper with the information on it, with like a stamp on it. I'm like...
From your publisher?
Yeah. I was like, what's my name?
On letterhead.
Here's my ID. This is my name. Oh my God, this is proof.
That is hilarious.
I love how often you write about paperwork. Like, it's clearly the bane of your existence.
Well, you know, it's something French people are used to, and they don't like it either. You know, people say, oh, you Americans come here and complain about paperwork and so forth. I'm like, well, if you want to hear somebody complain about it, talk to French people.
Yeah.
It's part of their culture, and they're used to it, where we're not so much, you know.
I can't think of... Hearing you talk about Paris makes New Orleans make so much more sense to me.
Well, I had to return something at Bed Bath & Beyond. I didn't have the receipt, and my partner came with me. I'm like, it's Bed Bath & Beyond. You know, they'll take anything back. And he's like, no, we need to find the receipt. And he's like going through the garbage. I'm like, it's okay. It's Bed Bath.
And they actually don't want the story. They don't want to talk about it.
They don't even want the receipt. It's like more paperwork.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like,
they
here's
don't
a new
want
one.
That paperwork.
Like, leave.
Yeah.
So you're an American, obviously. You spend a lot of time in Brooklyn. You live your life in Paris. Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel like a struggle? Like you have identities kind of firmly rooted in two different places? Or do you feel just very Parisian at this point?
No, I mean, I don't spend that much time in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I do come here occasionally because my publisher's here. I go to San Francisco, which is sort of I consider that my home in America, so to speak. But it's funny because when I'm coming to America, I'm really excited. And then when it's time to go, I'm excited to go home, back to Paris. So
it's more like a positive than anything else.
Yeah, it takes a couple of days of readjusting to wherever you go, which is hard. Someday I'm going to get my own private plane. I think that'll make it easier.
Yeah, probably.
That would be wonderful. So I know you love to work with chocolate.
Mm.
You love chocolate.
You went to chocolate school.
Yeah, you went to chocolate.
Is anyone else still thinking, like, wait, well, there's chocolate school?
By the way, do you do anything elaborate with chocolate?
I don't. You know, at Chez Panisse, we didn't really do a lot of chocolate desserts. It was mostly fruit desserts and things like that. It was more seasonal and so forth. So when I left, I started working with chocolate. I actually went to Belgium, went to chocolate school, and learned how to, you know, dip chocolate, make chocolate sculptures. I'm not good at it, you know, but that's a real skill. But it's not something you do at home. You know, a lot of it requires machinery and so forth. So while it was fun to learn all those things, it's hard to say to someone, here's how to dip your own chocolates. First, you have to make the ganache, and you have to leave it on the counter overnight. You know, people are looking at me like, you know, I'm nuts.
Yeah. So you would not do chocolate work at home. When you are at home and you are cooking in your kitchen, I love to ask this question of other people because every cook has that one or two tasks in the kitchen that they just cannot bring themselves to get excited to do. What?
You know, my least favorite thing, and I'm so cheap, is to cut circles of parchment paper to fit into the bottom of like a 9-inch cake pan.
Yeah, that's awesome.
You know, you have to put the paper on the counter, you have to draw a circle, you have to get the scissors out, cut it, and then it starts curling up and you got to put it in. And I know you can buy them already cut and they're like 10 for $5 or something.
Too much.
I know, I'm at the store, at the cookware store. I'm like, I'm not spending $10, $5. Then I'm sitting there snipping out, and the thing is like curling up and it's falling on the floor and the roll is going across. So that's the thing I hate to do.
Do you have a favorite cookware store?
I don't. You know, certain stores I like for certain, like Sur La Table in America seems to have more sort of cookware, bakeware, they have more quantity, more things to choose from, whereas Williams-Sonoma has a more edited selection. In Brooklyn, you have the Brooklyn Kitchen, which is amazing. You know, once again, it's a very curated selection, but everything they have there is like, oh my God, I've never seen these kind of metal, this kind of they have this cast iron cookware that's like from this place in America. It's like I've been making it for 150 years, and it's amazing. It's beautiful. It's very expensive, but
it's all those things that like you didn't know you needed or wanted, but now
you do. It's great, and they have great foods that they find from all over the place. The things you can't get other places.
What about in Paris? Where do you go?
It kind of depends. I actually go to flea markets and thrift stores. Once again, I'm a cheapskate, but we take road trips a lot. My partner has a station wagon, which is dangerous. But there's all these thrift stores in France you can go to and flea markets in the countryside where people get rid of, like, their old Le Creuset pan. You know, it'd be like a big stock pot that's been used, like, four times that was in grandma's attic, and it's, like, €5.
So, I want to go there and do that.
Yeah.
I actually did a whole blog post about how to find all those places with addresses.
Oh, my God.
And, like, in the countryside, we've gone to these places, and they're, like, warehouse, like, the size of, like, a high school gym. And it's all cookware, like just in shelves organized. I'm like, oh my God.
That beautiful copper pot on the cover of of my Paris kitchen. Is that yours?
Yes. And everyone's beautiful. Like, where'd you get that pot? And this is kind of funny. There's a store, it's a chain of hypermarkets called Auchan in France. And it's kind of similar to Target or
Walmart. We had an Auchan in Houston.
Right. They tried to open in the States. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it, but I'm sure they had different things. But I was there once and they had all this copper cookware and everything was €17 a piece. And it was heavy cookware. It wasn't like crappy copper, you know, thin stuff. It was made in France. And so I bought, you know, every piece I could manage to carry home, and that was one of those pans. And people are like, where'd you get that pan? It's so beautiful. It's copper. You
know? It's absolutely gorgeous. It's like the perfect size for a brace.
Yeah. The only problem is you can't put it in the dishwasher.
No.
But it works well.
You put your cookware in the dishwasher? Are you a big fan?
Mm-hmm. I love the dishwasher. I'm a big fan of dishwashers.
I write a lot about cookware, so I could totally go off on a cookware geeky moment right now, but I will save you both.
Thank you. Okay. Next question. David, what, in your opinion, is the best food city right now, like in the world?
Well,
that you've been to it.
There's a few. It's hard to say what's best because each city is different. Mm-hmm. I mean, San Francisco is great because the quality of ingredients. You know, you go to the market and there's like 12 kinds of lemons. And yeah, then you go to the restaurants and they're all using them, which is amazing. Even the taquerias have like sustainable beef from a local, blah, blah, blah. Vancouver is a great city. I was there on book tour a year or so ago, and the food was amazing. The Asian food everywhere I ate was like knock it out of the ballpark, exceptional.
Yeah, you said you have a blog post about that.
Yes, I think I do. that's the problem. You put things on Instagram and so forth, and they're gone. You know, they're gone after a few weeks. And people go, well, there was a restaurant that you ate at in Vancouver that had, like Japanese taco. I'm like, okay, I don't remember. But it's hard to put things on a blog because you have to take pictures and bring your camera to the restaurant, and everyone's staring at you, and then they get all nervous, and then you have to write everything down, and you can't make a typo. so it's just easier to Snapchat or to Instagram these things, but it doesn't stick around. Another great food city that I love is Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
There's this whole, you know, Israel's kind of like a microcosm of America in a lot of ways. It's a lot of immigrants, a lot of people coming together. And there's also that drive to make everything better. Like, we're here at Roberta's. It's like, how can we make really good pizza? It's not like, how can we make a lot of pizza? It's like, what can we do to make our own nuja? What can we do to make our own Italian-style pizza? And in Israel, like, the freshness of ingredients is amazing.
It's pretty unparalleled, yeah, from what I've tasted over there. We have a couple questions from the outside, from the ether.
Are they about Snapchat? Because I don't really know how to use it. I almost put a picture of myself in my underwear by accident. I was baking at home, and I was not wearing trousers. And then I noticed something at the bottom of the picture that was like, oh, that's... So I was like, glad I didn't press the button.
Yeah, no, the only questions from Snapchat today came from me, so no more. So these are from the ether. So what's your favorite cookie in the world?
I actually like chocolate chip cookies. I like oatmeal cookies, but I like chocolate chip cookies. I like a really good, soft, super chocolatey, like melting chips, little salty taste, pecans, or some sort of nut.
Is there a specific place where this cookie lives?
Or specific recipe?
You know, I love my recipe, and I know that sounds terrible to say that, but...
You should love your recipe. Yeah, it's your recipe.
It's yours.
I was talking to a friend about writing cookbooks the other night. He writes cookbooks as well, and I was saying, well, you know, you have to love your subject, and you live your book. And I've been making that recipe for about 30-something years, because it works. It's great. It's a great recipe. So that's in my book, Ready for Dessert. I've been using that a lot. That's my favorite recipe.
Can I just say one thing before you ask the next question? Your ice cream base is flawless.
Yay.
I use it all the time.
Awesome. Well, I loved writing the ice cream book. I wrote The Perfect Scoop.
Yeah, but
and that was really
book.
Fun to write.
I love thinking about you churning ice cream like in your bathroom, in your bedroom.
And if people get all weirded out, it's like, well, it's not like I put it in the toilet, you know?
Yeah.
It's like when you live in a tiny apartment.
You're like, what? There's toffee on my sheets. Whatever.
Yeah.
Could be worse, for sure. What is your favorite cheese and why?
There's actually two cheeses that I really like. One is Comté, which is pronounced with an N, but it's actually an M, Comté. And that's a mountain cheese made in France in the Alps. And you can get young cheese, which is about 6 months old or 4 years old, which is amazing. It's super nutty. It's actually an amazing, delicious cheese. And I love Brie de Meaux, which is a Brie cheese made near Paris, about an hour away. But Brie de Meaux is a special kind of Brie. I mean, the word Brie doesn't mean anything. Brie is made in Wisconsin. It's made in Japan. It's made in Israel, so Africa probably. But Brie de Meaux is a special cheese. It's made with only milk from that region, and it's 6 weeks old. And when you have a really good one, you just want to die. My partner's family has their country house near in that region. We go there, and we go to the Brie market, and it's just all these tables with these huge wheels of Brie that are like melting, and you just...
That's heaven.
And they, you know, they can barely pick it up to put it into the paper for you. And that's the best. And you can't describe the flavor. I was trying to describe the flavor of camembert to somebody. I said, well, it's kind of like your underwear after you took a step class.
Oh, my God.
They're like, okay, that's not making me want to.
No, that's
with a little bit of animal hoof.
Yeah, but it, you know, we're sort of attracted to funky flavors.
Yeah.
Yeah. But not necessarily phrased like that.
Yeah.
So Michael Harland Herkel, he's a wonderful friend and radio host on this network.
Oh.
He asks... And I apologize in advance for probably butchering this. Where can you get Le Beurre Bordier in New York City?
You can't.
Okay.
That was
Sorry,
easy.
Michael.
Yeah. Actually, though, people ask me about getting these things from France a lot. And there's actually a website. It's called like Pack Mule or something. I don't know the quite the, like packmule.it. And you can hook up with people that are going to places and they'll bring you stuff back.
Whoa.
So
that's cool.
You just blew my mind.
Which is kind of a good idea. And you can, I bring back
idea.
Butter all the time. But you know, you have really good butter
just,
in America.
Like,
we do.
Yeah, you have really good butter. And people write to me and they go, I can't get good bread in New York. I'm like,
what?
Hello?
You're not trying very hard.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, there's bad bread. There's bad bread in France,
yeah.
too. But you can get good butter in America.
Yeah. And then at Minnie Van Dad.
Okay.
This is your friend, I'm assuming. No? No, you don't know Minnie
probably.
Van Dad.
You're not tight with Minnie Van Dad.
He tweeted and he was like, ask him about the babka.
Oh.
And I was like, well, what about it?
So I'm assuming you know him and you know the babka. But no. No, because I was like, what about the babka? And he was like, what? He was like, why isn't the dough dry at all? It can't be the honey syrup. That's what he said.
Why isn't the dough dry?
Yeah.
You know, that recipe is from an Israeli couple in London who have a bakery and a restaurant called Honey & Co.
Hmm.
And I had met them a few years ago, and they made this spectacular meal for us in Ireland. And I wanted to make a recipe from their book, so I made it. I made that one for my blog because I like them and I wanted to, you know, introduce people to them. And that book is coming out in the U.S. pretty soon. The flour's different in Europe than it is in America. Mm. So they had sent some of the recipes to people in America to test, and I tested some too, with French and American flour. So I think they're still working on it, but mine came out fine. And
okay.
I'm not sure. I mean, it, you know, it's a moist thing because it's got syrup.
Yeah.
What it, you know, for people who don't know what the babka is, or babka, it's a yeast dough. You spread it with chocolate and nuts and brownie bits, and then you fold it up, roll it up, twist it, put it in a pan, bake it, and then you pour syrup over it when it comes out. So it's naturally moist.
Right. Okay, Minnie Van Dad, go for it.
Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah. I have to ask too, and I know this is like such a generic question, but I genuinely want to know.
My last meal ever? No.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Really? No. No.
Not like your, it doesn't have to be like your last meal, but it's like, what is your, like,
no, really?
Your
I got.
Meal?
Okay.
I know, but like, I really want to know.
Because usually the question is, why isn't there a print option on your blog? It's either that or it's like the last meal.
I mean, it doesn't have to be your last meal, but it's like your ideal meal.
It would be the fried chicken from Federal Donuts in Philadelphia.
Oh, my God.
The za'atar
fried chicken. Amazing.
Did you have it with the za'atar?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Hello.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And I had just eaten lunch, and we went there, and they were out of donuts, so we got chicken. I was like, I'm just going to have a bite.
And now I'm going to finish this.
Yeah. It's insane. It's really good.
It's really
That's
good.
That's my...
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Shout out to Solomonov. And then do you have like a guilty pleasure snack, like not like your beautiful Comté, or like, is there something like kind of down and dirty that like maybe you don't want to tell us but you're gonna have to tell us?
Well, I just had knee surgery, so I had to spend like 4 months not walking, so I ate a lot of peanut M&Ms.
Okay, that counts.
But I don't know if those are down. Those are, it's a pretty normal snack.
It's pretty normal.
It's not like, you know, spreading Tang on toast or something.
Yeah. Who does that?
I don't know. Okay.
Don't do that.
Yeah,
don't put Tang on toast, folks.
Yeah. Well, Anthony Bourdain got like busted, or like he admitted that he loves the mac and cheese at Popeyes, and everyone was like, oh, it's really good. Yeah.
I disagree, because the thing to get at Popeyes is the red beans and rice, but no hate. Wait,
no hate.
Although, don't eat the biscuit. Everyone's like, don't eat the biscuit.
Why?
I can't say it.
Okay.
No. People just said to me, don't eat, like, the biscuit will fill you up. And...
Okay. Oh, so, got it.
Yeah. Okay. And then, because you're like the ultimate authority on all things Parisian and delicious, we're gonna conclude this segment with a speed round.
Okay.
Okay, get ready.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire, like the best of everything in Paris.
Okay.
Okay. And you're allowed to, you know, like, think
best?
About it.
Okay.
You can pass if you need to as well.
And you're allowed.
Is there a button I hit?
You have a pass option.
Yeah. And you're allowed to also say like more than one place and comment.
Okay.
Okay. There's really actually no rules at all.
I know what you're gonna ask.
What?
It's like that. No.
You know what I'm gonna ask. Okay.
He's an old
I'm
pro.
So unprepared.
Oh, right. Okay, so best place for cocktails in Paris right now?
I like Pas de Loup, Loup. Amanda Boucher is an amazing bartender. She's this, actually, you know, I know this is sexist. She's a beautiful blonde woman, and you just see her, and she looks like this. She's a Minnesota girl. But she's like an awesome bartender, and she owns the bar, and or she's one of the owners, and she's a great cocktail maker.
Cool. Where is that?
It's right next to the Cirque d'Hiver, in the 11th.
Yep.
And they have great food there, too. It's a great place to go and have bar snacks.
So hip.
Yeah. But hip doesn't mean good.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is good.
Yeah. Okay. So, best
hip and good.
Hip and good. Best wine bar, like favorite place to drink wine.
There's a new one that I went to recently. I can't remember the name.
We can circle back.
Okay, it's a the word has it's swan in the title, and they do Vietnamese kind of snacks.
Le Cervin?
No.
With wine?
Yeah, it's a wine bar, and they have all natural wines. But the snacks are really interesting because you don't get like Vietnamese kind of snack. You know, it's French food, but it's very close to Vietnamese as well. And I know it's on the Rue Keller, K-E-L-L-E-R.
Okay,
that's enough for Google.
We can Google that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's croissant.
I like Blaise Sucre, which is over by the Marche de Ligue. It's a pastry chef that decided to quit his fancy job at a big hotel and open a little neighborhood bakery. And it's been open about, I want to say, 6 or 7 years. And he has really good croissants.
Okay. Baguette.
It's funny because in my neighborhood there's 5 bakeries and none of them had good baguettes, and it was very challenging because I go through phases. Sometimes I just want to eat wheaty breads, I want sourdough, or I want grainy breads. And when I started coming back to America a little more often, all I was craving when I got back to France was baguettes. And no matter wherever I travel, wherever I go, when I come back to Paris, the first thing I do is, like, get a baguette and smear salted butter on it and just eat it untoasted, and it's really good.
That sounds good. So
I actually like, there's a bakery called Landemain, L-A-N-D-E-M-A-I-N-E, and they have, like, 2 bakeries in Paris. If they had 3, nobody would like it because it's a chain. Oh, c'est pas bon, you know. It's not good, it's a chain. But I think they just have 2, so it's okay. And they do 3 different kinds of baguettes. They do, like, the ordinary ones. They do ones with a little bit of, I think, buckwheat flour in them.
Ooh.
And then they do just a country baguette, which is the one I like. So.
Yeah.
And they're super nice.
Okay. What about, like, best sort of, like, new modern French, like, of, you know, the new wave?
Of?
Restaurants.
Cuisine. Cuisine.
Sorry, food.
There's 2 places that I really like, and they don't really get a lot of press in the international press, but Pirouette, which is over in Layal, it's kind of set back. It's always busy because people who know good food like it. I mean, everything there, I've never had anything bad there. And that's a really good restaurant. Another one that I like a lot is 52 Faubourg Saint-Denis, which is over in the super hip new 10th area. But it's actually interesting because it's open from 8 a.m. to midnight, nonstop. They don't take reservations, so it gets very busy at like 8:30 or 9 p.m.
Is it open every day?
Yes.
Wow, like on Mondays and Sundays?
Yeah.
Wow.
And you can just, you know, so if you go, like French people are like, we want to eat with the French, we want to live like a local. I was like, well, then you have to eat at like 9:30 at night.
Yeah.
So I say go at like 8:40 or 7:45 and you can get a table. And the food's really good and the staff is super nice. That's kind of a new thing that's happened in France with all these new young
people
chefs.
People being nice.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, it used to be the crusty old waiter, which, you know, I don't begrudge. I think it's funny. It's a different nice that they have.
Yeah.
But these young people are super friendly and helpful, and they're actually interested in the food and the ingredients and what's happening. So they have really great waiters there.
Great. And then...
And so does Pirouette.
And maybe this doesn't apply at all, but, like, is there an old school place, like, a classic kind of, like, stalwart that you love?
You know, it's funny because the old classic places, a lot of them, like, you don't really go for the food. You go for the ambiance.
Mm-hmm. Or just an upscale place that you like.
Upscale? That's not my...
You can pass.
Okay, I'll pass for now.
All right.
Okay, and then let's see. Oh,
actually,
coffee.
Well, the upscale place. I actually ate recently. I ate twice this year at the Bristol Hotel, the restaurant Epicure. And normally, I'm not a huge fan of these meals that are 4 hours long. You know, it's very expensive. But I had 2 meals that were incredible, and the desserts were great. I was usually, you know, desserts can be, you know, by the time you're done with dinner, it's like. Phew. And I had this chocolate dessert, and it was super light. And the pastry chef understood what it was like to eat dessert after a meal like that. And I went to talk to him afterwards, and he was so humble and normal.
Cool.
So it's very expensive, you know, and it's not somewhere I go every day.
Yeah. What about coffee? Is there a new Or is there a coffee shop that you love?
I actually like Café Oberkampf. Mm-hmm. There's been this sort of coffee renaissance in Paris happening. All these young, hip people, you know, shaggy hair, beards, you know, stubble and so forth.
Is that Brooklyn influence?
Yes, exactly. And all the places have, like, brick, you know, exposed bulbs. The guys are cute. They're doing these pour-over coffees for, like, 7 minutes, you know, for $8. but Café Oberkampf has really good coffee. They're super sweet in there. It's tiny. And I like their coffee a lot.
Yeah. Do you ever eat crepes?
I do.
And where do you go when you do?
There's a couple places. I really like a place called West Country Girl, which is owned by this young couple who are really sweet. It's a couple, and I don't know if they're married or not, but his girlfriend or his wife makes the crepes, and then he runs a dining room. And she loves cheesecake, and I was testing recipes, and I brought her, like, a half a cheesecake. You know, when you're testing recipes, you always give people something. You're like, here's a cake, and it's got, like, one slice taken. So you feel kind of bad, though, you know, because it doesn't look so good, but, yeah.
Feel that bad.
Well, it wasn't like I clotted at it with my, you know, with my teeth or anything. Yeah. but I really like going, and they have really good crepes there.
Cool. Do you have any...
I don't have any nothing for the speed round.
Okay.
You covered it all.
Yeah, you did well.
I need a sedative.
Then we'll take a quick break. We'll relax, we'll decompress, and we'll be back with the morning after quiz.
On Tuesday, May 17th, please join Snacky Tunes for the 9th Annual Barbecue Blowout. Our inaugural chefs are Kings County Imperial with Beats and Rhythms by Domino Records. Tickets are $10 in advance at BBQ Blowout, May2016.eventbrite.com. Tickets include a plate of food and a complimentary Brooklyn Brewery. We're happy to announce returning partners of Nikki Digital and Heritage Radio Network. We hope to see you there.
Welcome back to The Morning After. We have David Leibovitz in the studio, it is time for The Morning After quiz. We usually call it hashtag the least important quiz of your life, but today it's hashtag the most vapid quiz of your life because, David Leibovitz, you live and write and work in Paris, France, but today I'm going to ask you what you know about Paris Hilton.
I know she has a lot of money. I know we haven't seen as much of her in the recent years.
I know. If she knew that someone made a quiz about her and is broadcasting it on an internet radio station, I bet her heart would be a little warm by it.
Her stone cold heart.
Her stone cold heart, because she hasn't been in the tabloids in so long, no one cares.
She was just with the Chinese artist in Paris. I can't pronounce his name. You have Google in front of you.
I do.
Google.
But she was with him in Paris, and he's like a political activist, and he's had problems with his own government for what he does.
Not I wait.
Yes.
That's who.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He was with her in Paris.
Oh, weird.
Oh.
Not with her, but with her.
Yeah, but maybe with her.
Okay, I haven't had lunch yet.
Okay, we haven't actually asked any questions yet. Okay.
Okay, so the first question is multiple choice.
Oh, phew. Okay.
Paris is a self-described animal lover, calling her pets, quote, her children. Which of these animals has not been a pet of Paris Hilton? A pig? Sugar glider, or a platypus?
I don't know what the second one is, so I'm going to say
platypus.
Either.
She's never had a platypus, you're
okay.
Right.
What's a
sugar glider? I think are those like flying squirrels.
Flying squirrels?
Yeah.
You didn't know.
She's had flying squirrels. She actually went to
that was her pet.
She has like 50 pets.
How does she have time for that? She's
money and help.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
That's why they're her children.
The next question is true or false. When Paris hits the karaoke club, what's her go-to song? A, Don't Stop Believe... Oh, no, sorry. That's not true or false. This is another multiple-choice question. Sorry. Okay. When Paris hits the karaoke club, what is her go-to song? A, Don't Stop Believin' by Journey. B, Stars Are Blind by Paris Hilton.
or C, Baby Got Back by Sir Mix-a-Lot?
I would imagine it's the first one.
Why?
The first one. Because it's a ballad, and she wouldn't do her own song.
That's false. She does sing her own song at the karaoke
club. You don't know her well enough.
Okay, sorry.
Because that's the one that she can sing best, right?
That's okay. The one she knows.
And I'm really glad it's not Baby Got Back, because that's my song.
Okay. This last...
Because she doesn't have back.
I would take her down.
Oh, poor thing. So this next one is, when I was reading about Paris Hilton yesterday, I realized that a lot of the things that come out of her mouth sound a lot like what you hear on RuPaul's Drag Race. So the next part of the quiz is called Who Said It? Paris Hilton or contestant on RuPaul's Drag Race?
Oh, okay.
All right, so you just have to say Paris Hilton or RuPaul's Drag Race.
Do you know what RuPaul's Drag Race is? Okay.
I love that show. If you can't hide it, just throw some glitter all over it.
That would be RuPaul's Drag Race.
You're right.
Yeah. Okay. That was easy.
Yeah.
I'm from San Francisco.
Get a straw and suck it up.
That would be RuPaul's Drag Race.
That's Paris Hilton.
What? Oh! She stole it.
She must
have. She might have, yeah.
I don't really think, I just walk.
That'd be Paris Hilton.
That's Paris Hilton.
Because yeah. Oh. Those drag queens are thinking.
Yeah, they're thinking about everything.
Yeah, you don't mess with them.
Emotions are for ugly people.
That would probably be Paris Hilton.
RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh,
no. Okay.
Here's another one that I read from RuPaul's Drag Race that I have to say because it is amazing, but it's too obvious to put in the quiz. Impersonating Beyonce is not your destiny, child.
Oh!
That'd be RuPaul's Drag Race.
That was RuPaul's Drag Race. Yeah. So good. Okay, that's all I have. You were a good sport.
Well, how did I score?
You
what
got,
did I win? Do I win
you
a pizza?
Two out of three.
You got two out of three.
Yeah. You got an 80%.
Mm-hmm.
Like a B plus.
Yeah.
All right, plus. So I've...
You really know your RuPaul's Drag Race.
So I'm going to go down on my Wikipedia page whenever that happens. It's going to say David Leibovitz is the world's, Brooklyn's, or Paris's most leading authority on Paris Hilton.
Paris and yeah. Paris, typing it right now on Wikipedia. Updating. Wow. David Leibovitz, this was an absolute honor and pleasure. Please come back and visit us like every week.
We'll do all
the time. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Listeners, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.